Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
We are back and we are live. It is Fight IQ presented by RotoWire. Here to talk UFC Buenos Aires, our main event, Neil Magny taking on the hometown guy, Santiago Ponzinibbio is the main event, co-main event. We have Ricardo Lamas taking on Darren Elkins. Here at Fight IQ, we talk DraftKings, breaking down each fight for your DFS contest. I am your host, the Daily Fantasy Sniper, analyst of Fight IQ, Chris Olsen, Joe, at Real Chris Olsen, at Sun Tzu. So if you hear us mixing up Joe and Sun Tzu, that's why. They are interchangeable. Guys, coming off, I think, a pretty successful card last week. How'd you guys do? I fared pretty well. And are you looking forward to this card, Joe?
Well, before we start on that, I am compelled to give our listening audience of millions my Sun Tzu lock play on this Invicta card that's right now on Fight Pass. And I fear that I've already moved the line because I gave this play out to the listeners of the Creating Alpha Pod, but at the time, it was Vivian Pereira plus 100 against Mizuki. Now it is Vivian Pereira minus 110. She is still a dog, but that is my Sun Tzu Invicta dog play. Get in on that. Bet with your head, not over it. I had a sweat for the second week in a row last week. It was not nearly the same sweat that I had when I was with Sean at MSG, but I was in a seven-player 1,060 contest where everybody had year. So it was one of those weird contests where after the Cerrone-Perry fight, the outcome was already decided. And I needed Cerrone to score another 1.5 points to tie for second and win three and tie for $3,000, or two more points to actually win and win $3,000. So it was another one of those where, you know, it was like the last fight that meant anything. I needed, someone to score a few more points than they actually scored. So as it turned out, I actually did end up losing some money because of that, with a lineup that went 6-0 because it was that kind of card.
Yeah. It was all the sharps looked pretty good last week. So I was, I at least had a good week. Chris, how did you fare? Did you manage to overcome Ashley Yoder defeating Amanda Bobby?
You know, You know what, dude? The past 2 weeks between judges and like weirdness happening, like 3 weeks ago, I got wiped out, and I'm mad enough to admit it. But the past 2 weeks have just been judges and weirdness happening between Kurt Hollibaugh and Shane Burgos and weird decisions. Like I forget what the first
nothing last was. Week should have killed you. Like
it didn't kill me, but it was just like, come on. And then well, Yair at the end. It was just
you were on Korean Zombie. Yes,
that was a perfect Sunday on the perfect cherry rather on the shit Sunday. So I'm ready to move on. There's some weirdness here on this card that I kind of like. I kind of like these weird cards. I like because I feel like there's edge to be had in them. So let's get it going.
I will say just the one thing I want to touch on about the judging. Well, there were some weird scorecards last week. I don't really think there were any bad decisions.
Oh.
You could say Yoder and Cooper coin toss, but it wasn't like somebody got robbed. That was a close fight. Like
Del Rosa didn't win that fight either.
Yes, he did. And it was a clear 29-20.
Oh, no. Sanchez landed the harder shots all fight. Come on, man.
That was close. I mean, De La Rosa, though, had the last laugh because he didn't earn his salary.
Nothing was a robbery is the point.
And I played De La Rosa in my 6-0 like, lineup, and he didn't pay his salary.
You know what it is? It's not a robbery, but it's like, you know what? Why can't the guy who deserves to win just win? I mean,
agree to disagree on that one. Let's move on. Let's get to this card. Before we start, make sure and check out RotoWire, rotowire.com/free. Check out all their usually paid content for 10 days, no credit card required, season-long all sports, daily fantasy all sports, optimizers, articles, all the good stuff, 10 days, no credit card required. And now let's talk about UFC at Buenos Aires, where we are going to have a ton of live dogs, at least in my opinion. Let's start off with a fight where I do like to favorite pretty handily. Nad Narimani, 9,100, taking on Anderson Dos Santos, 7,100. Narimani's the big favorite, -345.
Ah, Sean locking up again.
Dropping out.
Tamad's on Dos Santos is +315. Narimani coming off a win over Khalid Taha. Shoots for a decent double. He was a former Cage Warrior champion. Overall, Anderson Dos Santos, I don't think is a UFC caliber fighter. Making his debut here, I think Narimani has an edge pretty much wherever this fight goes. Although this fight is expected to go to a decision for DraftKings, I'm not so sure about the ceiling, but I am picking Narimani to win by decision, and he could either keep it standing and win on the feet or take it down. So Narimani pretty comfortably this week. Let's start with Chris.
Before we start, I need to say what's up to unemployed Mario Yamasaki in the chat. How are you? thanks for stopping by. That's hilarious.
Listen, I would have rather have Yamasaki in there than the Chaz Skelly submission last week.
Oh, that's another one. I forgot about that one. Thank you. That's another one there.
I'd rather have Yamasaki in there. He would have let him go out like a warrior.
I know, right?
Proceed.
But I pretty much agree with you. I don't think Dos Santos is a UFC fighter either. I'm pretty sure this fight is like third string, right? There was a dropout and then another dropout, and then we get Dos Santos. So, I mean, you know, you sort of expect it to a certain extent. You know, he's a wrestler. He comes forward, but he tends to walk straight in and doesn't really throw strikes all that much. So, I mean, he just makes fights so easy on his opponents. They can circle out. They can tag him up as he's coming in. And I don't even think he's that great of a wrestler for all the pressure he puts on. He seems to have a tough time getting takedowns on the regional level. So, yeah, I just think, I mean, Narimani should be able to just stick that jab in there and pick him off when he's coming in. He should be the better wrestler. He should be the stronger guy, probably. I think Narimani all the way here.
Joe?
So, again, since Sean made a general statement, I'm going to make a general statement. I think it's a lot more important for our millions of viewers to pick up how we're targeting certain fights for DraftKings than actually, you know, who we're selecting to win. And I went back and I looked at a card where I went, you know, 8-3, but I felt like I totally shit the bed because, you know, my targets were wrong. My DraftKings targets were wrong. And then I look back, you know, at another card where I went, you know, under 500, but the target fights for DK, you know, all sort of click. So, you know, it's not like this is not as much of a like wins and losses type of podcast where, you know, we're predicting the winners. Like, we're not going to get into any of those competitions with guys who are, you know, just, you know, basing off their wins and losses. You know, this is DraftKings oriented. So with that said, you know, Nir Amani, it's interesting. He's the highest priced favorite odds wise on the card. He is likely going to score all his points grappling based.
He's not the highest priced.
No, I mean odds wise. I'm sorry. Okay. Odds. Yeah. Betting line odds. He's not the highest priced on DraftKings, but he's got the highest betting line odds.
Yep.
I see Nir Amani as having a really solid floor, but potentially a limited ceiling. I am not playing cash this week for the third week in a row, but I think Nir Amani would be a solid, you know, free square and cash. I just don't know if this goes into the third round. I don't know if he's going to score enough in grappling to make him a worthy GPP play. And his opponent is taking this fight on short notice. I don't know what that means for gas tank. So my pick is Nir Amani. I just don't know how good of a GPP target he is.
Yep, I agree with that for sure. Next up, Jesus Pinedo, 8,500, taking on Devin Powell, still in the UFC, at 7,700. He actually got a win last time out against Alvaro Herrera, which says more about Alvaro Herrera to me, the body shot. Anyway, Pinedo, the newcomer, minus 200. Powell, plus 185. Give me Pinedo. Powell's not good. He's bad. Pinedo mixes it up. Decent prospect. A little bit wild. I think a little unpolished. He's got a lot of fights for being 22 years old. I think he's got like 20 professional fights. This is a great introductory fight for him. I'll take Pinedo. And at his price, 8,500, there's, again, his second time that I think the line's expanded to. We're getting a little bit of odds value here, and we're going to have three straight fights that happened. I think these early fights, we have some odds value developing. So I like Pinedo everywhere. If Devin Powell wins, he will just screw my night again. There's no way I'm playing Devin Powell. It just, I can't do it. He's horrendous. Joe?
So, first of all, I have a personal code where I never make fun of anyone who sustained a testicular injury, and that's Devin Powell. So I'm not going to make fun of him as a fighter.
But it's a step below Bryce Mitchell's injury, which if you don't know about that, guys, go look it up.
Yeah, it's probably not quite as bad as Bryce Mitchell's injury. Man, I'm stumbling. So here's the thing. And again, I've used this phrase before, the James Tahuna effect. Powell has lost to much better fighters than his opponent has actually beaten. I don't know. I don't believe that the record of the fighters that he's beaten is all that good. You know, with that said, you know, is this a sacrificial offering to a local fighter by the UFC? Perhaps. I am going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to actually pick Devin Powell. And if I get burned by the James Tahuna effect, so be it. I don't have a lot of confidence in this pick. I mean, you know, this is a strange fight. I just can't lay the number on. I don't like a whole lot of the mid-range this week anyway. I think this is more of a Stars and Scrubs type of card. But
I disagree with you a lot, actually.
I'm gonna take a flyer on Devin Powell here. It's not with a very high level of confidence, though.
If you're an odds-based player, and I'm not always, but odds-based, you have to look at Pinedo, too. He's minus 200, 8,500.
I agree.
Minus 170 to end inside the distance. And Pinedo inside the distance, plus 160.
Look,
pretty good number. I get it. I just want
to. It's not bad. It's not bad. It's just I've never seen this guy fight before.
I've watched a little bit of tape. He's not bad. He looks better to me than Powell. He's a better athlete.
Powell does have that jiu-jitsu, though. I mean, you know, and he lasted three rounds against Drakkar Close. So we'll see. Fair.
Yep, we will. I like the mid-range a bunch more between this fight and the next one. But Chris, what do you have on Pinedo? And Powell. Yeah, I might say his name, Powell. No, I knew who it was. I didn't want to say his name again.
Okay. No, I don't blame you. I was actually really high on Herrera in that fight. And for the first 2.5 minutes, it looked really good. And then one body kick changed it. It's another piece of information that you have to add in, because up until that point, I had never seen Devin Powell throw a body kick that wasn't for anything other than defense to like keep his opponent off him. But he threw a couple of hard body kicks. And I think as you mentioned there, Sean, his opponent here is reckless and actually has been susceptible to body kicks, and we've seen them land. So we got to throw that in the information bank there. But ultimately, I think the pressure and the power is too much. I think the wrestling game is going to be too much. I mean, we can talk about Powell's BJJ all we want, but at the end of the day, we haven't seen him use it to any effect in the UFC. We haven't even seen him come close, as a matter of fact. So, I'm gonna go with. Now I have forgotten the name. I'm gonna go with Pinedo here. Can he get a stoppage? I think he can I think at that price he could be worth it. But the thing we know about Powell is he's a tough dude. I mean, he took about, you know, 5 really hard clean body shots from Herrera. One of them dropped him. He kept fighting. I mean, he almost died after the fight, but he kept fighting. So if he doesn't get a finish, that could be something to consider. But you know, I agree with Sean. I don't think that Devin Powell is a UFC caliber fighter. So I'm going to have to go with the aggression and the power and the wrestling game to be enough for Pineda to get a finish here.
We spent way too much time on that. Laureano Staropoli, 8,200, taking on Hector Aldana, 8,000. And the lower price fighter is our favorite. Lots of odds value. And this is going to keep climbing, by the way. On 5 dimes right now, it's minus 130. Comeback on Staropoli, plus 120. I think this will be around minus 150 come fight time. I like Hector Aldana a lot. One of the reasons why I like the mid-range on this card. Looked decent in his first fight in about 3 years against Song Kanan. Won a round. Was, I think, winning the second one, starting to slow down, ran into a power shot, and Song knocked him out. Whereas Staropoli is bad. Like, again, I watched a little bit of tape on Staropoli. He's in there because he is from Argentina, and the UFC desperately needed Argentinian fighters. He is there to be hit. His ground game isn't very good. I like Aldana pretty much wherever this fight goes. I think, especially in the feet, I think Aldana will probably even stop the newcomer. This line, though, it's just weird. It opened up at such a weird place. Staropoli opened up minus 320, which is just insane, and now he's plus 120. So give me Hector Aldana. He's a low-level UFC fighter, and I know we've talked about levels last fight, and DC says it all the time, but it's totally true. There are levels to this, and Hector Aldana, while he's not a world beater, is on a different level than Laureano Staropoli, in my opinion, unless we have another Devin Powell, Alvaro Herrera type situation on our hands. Chris, you start this one off.
Yeah, I think this would actually even be a little bit worse than the Devin Powell situation. When you look at Staropoli, the records of the fighters that he beats, one of them was literally 1-0. His last fight, the guy was 1-2. So, I mean, that's literally the kind of that's the kind of opposition we're dealing with here. The one thing I'll say about him is the shot that he landed in the most recent tape I could find to beat his then 1-0 opponent was actually a pretty nice counter right hand. He sort of, hid behind his shoulder to absorb a strike and then landed a counter flush on his opponent's chin and knocked him down. You know, and I have to say that Herrera, is it, right? Herrera?
Aldana.
Aldana.
Is this fight, yeah.
Yeah, no. Aldana is susceptible to that. We saw him get knocked out by Song Kanan because he tends to dip his head on the way in, and Kanan just realized that and threw a straight right hand, and it cracked him. So, you know, Staropoli could do something like that, but, you know, I actually liked a lot of what I saw from Aldana in his last fight. He's got really, really big, hard leg kicks. He tends to blitz forward with power. He's got a decent wrestling game, lifting up and tripping out the post leg. We saw him do that a couple of times. You honestly have to assume that Strapoli gets finished here, just because. We've seen him actually get thrown around in wrestling exchanges. Herrera's going to be the much bigger guy. He's been subbed out as well. Huh? Aldana. I'm sorry. I'm still thinking of
that. You should get away from this fight.
But could he get hit with a hard counter at some point? Yeah, but otherwise, everything on tape says that Aldana's just going to come and smash, so he's got to be the pick.
Joe?
Look, there's great odds value here, right? This is there's tremendous odds value. I agree with everything you guys said, but I want everybody to remember two numbers. And those numbers are 1 and 43. And 1 is the number of fights that Aldana's had in the last 43 months. So everybody should be cognizant of the fact that this guy he's a boxer. He's fought once in 43 months. He looked okay in his last fight before getting KO'd. But, you know, let's not go completely crazy here. Yes, there's great line value. Yes, on paper. I don't know why the line opened the way it did. The lines have been for shit since Nick Kalikas has stopped making lines on MMA, on UFC. But let's just keep that in mind here. I'm with you. My selection is Aldana, but please remember 1 in 43.
All right. Next up, Humberto Bandone, 8,900, taking on Austin Arnett at 7,300. Bandone, the favorite, -240. Arnett, the dog, the comeback is +220. I like Bandone in this one, riding with the favorite here. But it is hard to get a read on him. He's been in two UFC fights for a combined total of about 90 seconds. Knocked out Martin Bravo as a big dog. Lost, got knocked out by Gabriel Benitez. Mogul Benitez is legit. Was a dog in both those fights. The Bravo win was a huge upset. Ultimately, I just don't like Austin Arnett. I think he's a little too he's passive at range. He tries to get these kind of grinding type of fights, and ultimately, I don't think he's going to do enough to get a decision here. I don't think he has enough to finish Bandone. Although Bandone, maybe he's chinny. Mowgli did catch him. Arnett losses to Sandhagen and Dawoodu does appear to be pretty tough. The line suggests Bandone is going to get a finish. I'm more in the camp that I think if he does get one, I think Arnett is tough and it will be a late finish. But give me Bandone. Ultimately, I just think Arnett doesn't have a ground game, a takedown game, and is a little too passive. He is live to the knockout, though. I do think it's a good fight to target for GPPs, just based really on Bandone's history. Joe?
Well, on one hand, we got a guy that's fought 4.3 seconds in the octagon. At least he is training at a good camp in Team Oyama. This is why this card is so, there's so much variance on this card. And then we've got, you know, Austin Arnett, who comes from the camp that Sean always fades, Sick Jitsu.
Everyone fades that camp.
That's my head.
Everybody seems to fame Sick Jitsu in Washington.
Throw body kicks, guys. Throw body kicks.
Coming off of 3 losses, he is a tough guy. I mean, you know, I don't know why Dawoodu didn't put him away. Sandhagen, you know, just brutalized them for as long as that fight lasted. I don't understand the matchmaking here. It doesn't make any sense to me why a guy coming off 3 losses is flying to Argentina on the UFC's dime to fight a quasi-local fighter. Who's fought, you know, 4.3 seconds in the octagon. I don't understand this matchmaking. On paper, this should be Humberto's fight on paper. But again, it's another one of those situations where we haven't really seen a lot of this guy in the octagon. If you're playing mass entry GPPs, you probably want to have 1 or 2 shares of Arnett. I am going to pick Humberto here to win. But again, it's another one of those, I don't know, fights.
Yeah, we got a bunch of those in this card. Chris?
Okay, so this is going to be my first major dog pick of the night. Couple things to say about this. I think Arnett got two of maybe the worst style matchups he could have possibly gotten in Dawodu and Sandhagen. You have two slick strikers with deep MMA games who like to throw in combination. And the thing about Arnett is he's got a very meat and potatoes pressure boxing game, which I think can be effective if you allow him to lead, which Dawodu and Sandhagen certainly didn't. And also, speaking of which, they're both faster than him too, which is another reason why. The thing I really hate about Bandanai, and I said this coming into the last fight against Mowgli, and he obliged. He did exactly what I thought he would, which is he likes to let you come forward and pick you off with a counter. But that didn't work because Mowgli hit him first. I think that if you are going to let Austin Arnett come forward and play a pressure boxing game with you where he gets to lead the whole fight, I just think that's a fight that he can win. And I don't think a guy like Bandanai has sharp enough counter strikes to make him pay for it. I mean, the knee he hit on Martin Bravo was nice, but it was also, like, I don't want to say it was fluky, but I mean, if you ran that back 100 times, how many times does he land it? You know, I mean, that's the way I always like to think of those kind of things. I really think Arnett, I mean, I'll disagree slightly, Sean. I mean, he's not a big wrestler by any means, but he does have a wrestling game that he can use here. He might not want to because Bandanai is act up off his back, but I really just think the meat and potatoes pressure boxing game is going to be enough against an inexperienced fighter like Bandanai, who's going to let you control the fight. So for the discount, give me Arnett here.
Okay, let's move on. Alexandre Pantoja, 9,300, taking on Olka Sasaki, 6,900. Pantoja's the favorite at minus 305. Comeback on Sasaki, plus 275. I think there is our least expensive fighter on the card is super live. Alexandre Pantoja, good fighter. 3-1 in the UFC, but his close win against Eric Shelton, beat Neil Siri, lost to Dustin Ortiz, and beat Brandon Moreno. I think this is actually, outside of Dustin Ortiz, obviously, this is the worst style matchup he's faced. Sasaki is super long for flyweight. It's also weird we have another flyweight fight, but we'll get past that. Sasaki at range in this one, it's just weird. And he's really good in scrambles. I know he was subbed by Juicy A. Formiga, but he subbed Justin Scoggins. He subbed Janelle Lausa. He's got a sub over Gates, Leandro Issa, someone else. I'm forgetting his first one. I don't remember who it was. Tons of rear naked chokes in the UFC. We've seen Eric Shelton have a little bit of success on the ground against Alexandre Pantoja. I just think in the scrambles, just with the frame that Sasaki presents, he's live off his back. He's live to these scrambles we see at 125. And at range, God, a guy that long of this division, I'm not investing a ton in Alexandre Pantoja as the most expensive fighter in the card. I think Sasaki is live. And while I think Pantoja probably has enough skills to win a close fight, I think it's 29-28 decision. I'm going to pick Pantoja, but Olka Sasaki to me is the better DraftKings play 9 times out of 10. There you go, Chris. I'm taking a dog for DraftKings. I see Joe chomping at the bit. He's going to go second this time. Chris, are you with me on the dog here?
Well, you know, I'm actually kind of in the middle. All that suspense, and then I'm going to take it all right away. But I agree with you that he's live. I think he's live in every fight, just for the reason you alluded. He's just such a weird frame for this division that I don't know that guys really know how to handle him. Like, he's had success in pretty much every fight he's lost. Go through every fight he's lost. Hayes, who choked him out?
Formiga.
Formiga. That fight, he was winning round one. But having said that, I mean, we've already seen a slick back taker get on his back and choke him out in Formiga. So, you know, we could see that again here. I also like Pantoja's stand-up, is pressure boxing. I think is what he's going to have to do against a really long fighter. He's going to have to he's really going to have to negate that range, which Sasaki is getting better at using. And, you know, I agree with those long limbs. He is a problem. I just don't know if I can trust his entire game. You know what I mean? I think against a guy like Janelle Lauza, it's an easy pick because Janelle Lauza can't wrestle and can't grapple. But against a guy who can do everything, it's just tough for me to pick Sasaki. I think that Formiga is the more well-rounded fighter. I think he's got the better skills. I just think he's a little bit better everywhere. So, yeah, give me Formiga.
Joe?
Wow. Okay. So I get that, you know, people, you know, are down on Novo and Yao as a camp, but Sasaki has only beaten guys that have exhibited poor fight IQ. Okay. I mean, catching Justin Soggins in that sub. I mean, yes, it was, he had a decent fight against Heist, but I think Heist just toyed with him for three rounds. I expect Pantoja to flatten Usaki here. You know, he's got very bad stand up. His game is submission from his back. I don't see Pantoja as having that type of bad fight IQ here. I get that he's a hard guy to pay up for. This is just, like I said, one of these weird slates here. But I disagree with Sean about the mid range. I think this is a Stars and Scrubs type of card. I will be using a fair amount of Pantoja here. I don't think Sasaki is live at all. I like other guys down in that range. Pantoja, the cannibal from Novo Uniao, all day.
I like everybody between 8,600 and 7,600 way more than Pantoja. Like everyone I would play in a tournament.
But Joe,
outside of Steropoli and Devin Powell.
I don't even disagree that Pantoja might finish him, but you think it's a waste at 6,900? Like, you wouldn't touch it at all?
There are other guys I like.
I mean,
I don't think I have to go there when I have Ferreira, Heinisch, I have Aldana, I have Botello, I have, you know, this mid range, I have Pinedo in that range, Pajeris, Fabinski, we're going to talk about, even Lamas and Elkins. I don't know how you don't like the mid range, but
I do not. Not for DraftKings.
Agree to disagree. That's a good, this is a good one. I'm formulating my hot take in my head already.
Nice.
All right. Here we go. Next fight. Michelle Pajeris, 8,600, taking on Bartosz Fabinski, 7,600. Pajeris is the favorite at -125. Fabinski is the dog at +115. The one thing I need to see on this fight still, and I know I'm pretty sure it already happened. I need to go find the videos. They've done stare downs, correct? I don't think I've seen video of the stare downs.
I haven't seen them yet, but I think they have.
I need to find it because I want to see how undersized Pajeris is at 170.
But he's undersized against everybody. I mean,
but this is my point here. In this matchup particularly, I would have a problem with that. And Fabinski is that relentless grappling wrestling type. I understand Pajeris has more tools to win this fight. However, his best tool is BJJ. And if he can't get it there, if he ends up on bottom and Fabinski uses his wrestling to hold him there, you know, that's an issue, obviously. And just potentially wears out the gas tank with all the muscle he has. I know he's up at 170. He's still carrying around a lot of muscle. By the way, Pajeris minus one, Fabinski +115 at 7,600. He has a little, just, you know, sneaking up in the odds value too. 115 and 7,600. It's not a ton, but, you know, a typical week that's around 7,800, 7,900. So savings of a couple $100. I think this fight is good to target in draft because I think the winner is going to score a bunch. This should be a grappling based fight, a mid range grappling based fight. I like it here. I really pick. I'm going to be wishy washy because if Fabinski is just towers over Pajeris, I'm probably going to lean towards Fabinski as my pick. If I think Pajeris, just size-wise, will be able to keep it upright when he needs to, end up on top in some of these scrambles, and that's the way I'm going to lean. Overall, I like this fight a ton. Gun to my head right now, give me Michelle Pajares at 8,600. But again, it's really, I'm playing both sides of this fight. Joe?
Look, I get it. I mean, you know, he's going to have a 6-inch height advantage, right? At least on paper. Favinsky, that is. You know, here's the thing, okay?
He's one-dimensional.
I still believe that Prezeris is going to have a strength advantage in this fight. Look at who Fabrinsky has fought, okay? He took Garrett McClellan to decision. Garrett McClellan may be one of the worst fighters in UFC history. Now, here's the other interesting thing. Here's the other part of the narrative. I don't think Fabrinsky can hold down Prezeris, which is actually not a bad thing. Because if you look at, like, say, Covington Barbarina, you know, Covington could not hold Barbarina down, so he just took him down 12 times. And that's gold for DraftKings. So will Fabrinsky take down Prezeris and have Prezeris get back up again? I'm sure that that's a possible outcome. Or Prezeris clearly has the better jiu-jitsu. He clearly has the better stand-up. Will he be able to clock Fabrinsky as he's coming in to shoot for a takedown? Or will he be able to work a sub off his back? Now, on paper, Prezeris does not have great takedown defense. I believe it's 46%, something around there. This is going to be an interesting fight. I do believe that, you know, it should be targeted for DraftKings. There has been a pretty sizable line move to Fabrinsky. So I think it'll be an interesting fight to target. I just don't know how anyone could be super confident in Fabrinsky. I do see him as a semi-live dog in this fight, but, you know, look at the level of competition. I mean, Prezeris has fought so much better competition here, and people consistently underestimate him, and he always seems to come out on top. So I'm going to pick Prezeris for the win, but I can understand wanting to play Fabrinsky here.
Chris?
I can understand Fabrinsky too, and especially I know a guy like Sean who loves his wrestler grapplers. You see all those takedowns, but there's a big problem that hasn't been mentioned yet, and that's that he gassed out terribly against Emil Mech. Emil Mech had chances to finish him in both the second and third rounds and just couldn't help but connect himself to Bartosz and just really give the fight away. I mean, he got so tired, and I just think that, as Joe says, if he's not going to be able to hold him down, and I don't think that he will, I just think that he's not going to be able to finish, and at a certain point, he's going to get back up and gas out. You mentioned the jiu-jitsu edge. Obviously, you have to take a shot in DraftKings with all the takedowns for dog price, but I could really just see Bartosz, you know, having a good first round, coming out, not being able to hold him, getting tired, and we all know that Prezeris hits like a truck. It would take maybe one of those overhands to really stun him. Hits harder than Emil Mech, certainly. So yeah, I mean, I could see it going both ways, and I could see Fabrinsky having a good first round, but ultimately, I see this fight ending in a Prezeris stoppage.
All right, let's move on to Pollyanna Bortello, 8,300, taking on Cynthia Calvillo at 7,900. Let's see where this line has gotten. I actually haven't looked. This will be interesting. Bortello up to -160, Calvillo +150. Look, people, Bortello was already the hot pick coming into the week, and Calvillo looked like she was on death's doorstep at weigh-ins, trying to make weight. Calvillo's a wrestler. Bortello has some wrestling. I think she's going to be stronger. By the way, there were points in I think Calvillo and Calderwood that she should have got a takedown and didn't in those opportunities. I think Bortello can keep it standing and piece her up on the feet. The issue now is Botello is going to be really, really popular. I think Calvillo is live if she can get a takedown and end up on top. You know, I don't know how good Bortello is working off her back. That's her only path to victory here for me. And the energy it takes to grapple, I was going to have some shares of Calvillo coming in just because I thought she'd go under-owned, and now she's definitely going to be under-owned, but now even I'm off. She would need that energy to grapple. Give me Pollyanna Bortello. I think it's clearly a chalk play, but it's one I'm going to eat this week. Who's starting this off? Chris, for this one. Go ahead.
Yeah. For the second week in a row, when she's not fighting, I have to mention Aspen Ladd. I mean, you have to consider that, look, these fighters can look like they're on death's door, and then when they rehydrate and get some food in them, they're basically fine.
I was already picking Aspen Ladd in that fight. Is the different scenario.
All right, calm down. I didn't see the ceremonial weigh-ins, but I did see somebody posted a little clip of Calvillo walking in. She looked fine. She looked absolutely fine. So you know, if you were going with Calvillo, and then now you're even more going for her because you know people will be off her, I say go for it. I mean, I don't think her striking is all that bad. I think she has a tendency to fall in love with it, which I think cost her the Carla Esparza fight. I think she was doing good on the ground, and then they just started, you know, basically having a boxing match, which I don't think is her strength. But I think she can hold her own. I think she's serviceable on the feet. And I just think that, you know, Botello has a nice kicking game. But other than that, I mean, her striking is pretty underdeveloped, I think. I kind of just see Calvillo being a little bit better no matter where this fight goes. And now that I see that she looked okay, I'm getting smiles over there, so I can't wait.
That's craziness.
You think she's going to be better everywhere? Come on. Okay, make your pick. Make your pick so
wait,
I can go.
So what, Calvillo doesn't have jiu-jitsu? What are you trying to say? She's
a severe striking disadvantage.
Yes.
And a severe strength disadvantage.
Do you think she's at a severe striking disadvantage?
And strength.
Yes. I think is a little closer.
Strength, maybe. But striking, I mean, I don't understand. She has a kicking game. This is a
low-level fight, right? This is a low-level fight. Missing weight, and I understand the reason why she missed weight came out. And I always said I would rather have a fighter miss by 2 pounds than miss by a quarter of a pound. But no one at 115 should miss by 2 pounds and look that bad, right? So that has to play into the narrative. Also, I believe, and I'd like to confirm this, she has been spending less time at Alpha Male. I know someone, I'd heard this. I don't know that she left the camp altogether. It still shows up on Tapology that she's with Alpha Male, although I believe someone did tweet out that she has been spending less time there, you know, which to me is a negative. But look, this is a tough fight. I mean, you know, getting outstruck by Carla Esparza, you know, who's a wrestler.
Who has an underrated boxing game.
Okay, fair enough. I don't see how anyone could be confident in either side here. I think what could happen here is this could be an extremely boring, low-scoring fight for DraftKings because Cavillo's going to shoot, and if she can't get the takedown, okay, it's going to be one of these ugly, clinchy, grindy, striking fights that's going to be, you know, horrid for DraftKings. So play this fight at your own risk. I can understand wanting to take a shot with the dog here. If you think she's going to get takedowns, that's her path to victory. But this could be a really ugly fight.
I think the odds value on Botello is going to make her really chalky. And if you disagree with that show, you should probably play cash this week. But we'll move on from there. Marlon Chito Vera, 9,200, taking on Guido Canetti at 7,000. Odds on this fight, Marlon Vera, -290, Guido Canetti, +260. I haven't listed anything that that Brett Apley has done this week, but I know he loves Marlon Vera. Like, he is his biggest fan. I'm sure he's going to play at least 80% of him. by the way, that's exactly opposite, so just so you're aware, probably. The problem is Guido Canetti's not any good. He got a win last time out against Diego Rivas. You know, he beat the hometown Chilean. He's 38 years old. He's actually looking like he's getting better. The problem here is just a bad matchup. If he goes to take down Chito Vera, he's going to get submitted. And on the feet, while, you know, Canetti marches forward and throws big shots, I like the push kick Vera uses to keep distance. I think he'll manage to keep distance using his range. And ultimately, I do think Canetti will slow down. Give me Marlon Vera at 9,200. I just, again, this is another, I have an issue with, you like Stars and Scrubs. I have a real issue with Stars and Scrubs because I don't know about the ceiling of any of these guys up in this range. So give me Vera for the win. Joe?
So prior to his last fight against the overhyped hometown fighter, Kennedy was on a 1-4 run. Okay. Not exactly losing to super high competition either. You know, let's just take a quick look at who Guido here has.
Guido.
Okay.
Guido.
Guido, sorry. Kung Ho Kang. Briones. Alejandro Perez. Beltran. Okay, not higher end fighters. You know, he was losing too regularly. He's 38 years old. He is the hometown guy here, right? I mean, Vera has been improving as a fighter. You know, his story is pretty well known, why he fights. Kennedy will rush out and, you know, will gas out. You know, if he doesn't get what he needs to get accomplished early on, he'll gas out. I do like that, you know, Vera's improving. He's only 25 years old. Won his last fight by KO. Had two really tough fights prior to that against Lineker and Andrade. I like him. I like him here a fair amount. You know, we are looking for likely a submission win. He is priced up, so if he doesn't get the finish in the first or second round, there is a chance that he won't earn salary, but I just can't see using Kennedy much. So I'm on Vera here.
Chris?
Yeah, I feel like I could pretty much just copy and paste all my Vera predictions for the last three or four fights. He always is too passive, hangs back, gets himself backed up, loses the first portion of the fight at least, and then in the second or third round comes up and says, oh, crap, I'm behind, and then starts to push forward and do some work. Sometimes it's enough to get the win. Sometimes it isn't. That's just what you're gonna get when you get a Chito Vera fight. I mean, I like certain things about him. I like his build and frame for the division. He's got a good kicking game. He's got good jiu-jitsu, obviously. He's just so passive. He just gives away so many fights. And as you guys mentioned, Kennedy's going to come forward and push a pace. And he's going to, take the fight to him. Now, is it going to be a situation where Vera gets down on the cards and then has to come back and get a stoppage? He was losing that fight to Willie G. Burin, guys. He was losing that fight. I don't know how you can trust Marlon Vera at all. I think he's probably the better. We always say skill for skill. He's the better guy, but I don't know if it matters if you're just gonna be so passive and concede so much. I'm gonna have a little bit of Kennedy here just because I can't trust Vera to get it done, and I certainly can't trust him to get it done in the first round or a high volume second round.
Look, there are guys I like more in the upper range. Let me be clear about that. There are guys that I like more. You know, like Ponzinibbio and there are guys I like more. However, I can see the path to victory here by submission in, let's say, the second round.
Someone in chat is saying that Chris's hot take should be that Kennedy scores 170.
Remember it right here.
Cesar Mutanchi Fajeda, 8,400, taking on Ian Heinisch at 7,800. Line on this fight. Fajeda is the favorite, minus 170. Heinisch the dog at plus 150. This is an interesting fight for me in that, again, Joe, I like the mid-range a lot here. I think, especially for tournaments, I think either Fajeda is going to get a takedown and submit Heinisch quickly, or Heinisch is going with the bombs that he throws, knock Fajeda out who we've seen be chinny in the past. I know he's changed his style. You know, decision win over Marquardt, submission win over Roberson. In order for Fajeda to score well, he has to find the submission. I think on the ground, though, his BJJ there's a big enough advantage that he will find a submission on the ground. We know about the chin issues. I have a hard time trusting this fight for cash for the reason I just laid out on both sides. By the way, just the color commentary on this fight. There's a Ian Heinisch has a piece out on the Players Tribune website detailing his time in prison and one of the islands off his
Rikers Island.
I mean, he was at Rikers, but I was thinking about the island prison he was in. I want to say the Canary Islands outside of Spain. Just the prison system out there. It's a really interesting read. Players Tribune, really good piece. It is titled, Have You Ever Been to Rikers Island, which was where he ended up. Pick-wise, though, I'll go with the experienced guy in Fajeda, but I think it's a good GPP fight. Chris?
Yeah, I actually think this is a really easy fight for Fair. I think this is one of my strongest plays. Now, if you are a regular Fight IQ listener, and I know you are, you'll know that I've talked up Marcus Perez as an underrated fighter here. I get mocked for it generally, but if you like Heinisch here, then remember, please, that he recently got finished by Marcus Perez with a arm triangle choke from the bottom. So that should tell you a little something about his BJJ. He wants nothing to do with it. And it's so strange too, because he's a primarily a wrestler. And he's got to avoid guards like the plague. So already, to me, that's a limiting factor for him. He's going to try to blitz in with wild strikes, and I mean really wild strikes, to close the distance. And Mutachi has been better at keeping range lately, keeping distance. You mentioned that that Marquardt fight. I thought he did a great job of keeping his range in that fight, of actually slipping shots. I think that, I mean, if Mutachi doesn't roll over this dude, I'll be pretty surprised. Can he catch him with like a big wild shot coming in? Sure, he can. It's MMA.
That's the Warrior GPPs.
Yeah. Okay. But I mean, even so, not that many. I mean, let's be honest. But a couple shots, fine. But ultimately, as I said, Fajeda is one of my favorite plays on the card. I think he gets this done in relatively quick fashion.
Joe.
Wow. So there's another possible outcome to this fight. Heinrich, a collegiate wrestler, his wrestling could nullify the jiu-jitsu of Ferreira. This could be kind of an ugly, grindy fight, low-scoring decision. You know,
here's my problem with that. Just, do you think Fajeda can stand in any kind of fight for three rounds without getting knocked out? That's my worry.
Well, I mean, you know, if you believe that, then, you know, you should certainly have some shares of the dog, which I will. You know, look, I was disappointed in the way that Ferreira fought Marquardt. I mean, you know, that's you got an aging guy, you know, that's a guy he should have dominated. I was at that fight in Norfolk. You know, Roberson has no ground game, none, zero. I mean, that was a good, you and I were at that fight, you know, right?
So Joe,
that was a
Joe, yeah. Arm triangle choke from the bottom, Joe.
Who?
Heinrich.
Right. Oh, okay. So I get it. You know, but I'm not as in love with Ferreira as you guys are. I mean, I will certainly.
I'm not in love with them.
I will pick him.
I have a love affair. You can direct your comments to me, Joe.
I will cautiously and with some trepidation pick him to win, but I would not be surprised if this turned out to be a boring, grindy fight, low scoring. I will have a few shares of the dog because he's attractively priced. Not my favorite dog, but I will. I'm not going to high weight this fight in my lineups, but I will have some shares. I will pick Ferreira to win, but it's not with the confidence that the real Chris Olsen has.
But do we know? What I heard on a broadcast was that he was a high school wrestler in some college. I mean, does he even have like a real wrestling?
I think it was D3 college. I think. I mean,
yeah, he wrestled in prison. If you read the piece.
And not wrestling in prison is for more than just, you know, fun. So
it's like an episode of Oz, basically.
No, it's not American prison. It's just
very good.
Piece.
Very
that
good.
That was good.
I love it.
Like an episode of Oz.
Let's move on here because I'm hungry. And
yeah,
this is gonna get off the rails. Khalil Roundtree Jr., 8,800, taking on Johnny Walker at 7,400. As much as I love Johnny Walker, he is not the alcohol, and he is the dog. He's plus 160, Khalil minus 170. Huge inside the distance prop for this fight. kill or be killed. Look, we've seen Walker knocked out on the regional scene. If I remember right, he's been hit before. You get hit by Roundtree, you go to sleep. And Walker has the game. If Walker's able to get Roundtree down, he'll win. It's really that simple when you're looking at Roundtree fights until he proves you otherwise. This is a great GPP fight for me. I lean towards Roundtree. I've seen the power. I like his striking style. Ever since his first fight on Tough, the fight to get into the house, when he started throwing soccer kicks on the ground to the solar plexus, I've been a fan of Julio Roundtree. Those were vicious. And that was one of those moments I'm like, okay, I'm going to like this guy. And I still do. I wish he had some kind of ground game. He's not a world beater. I get it. But because of the personality and who he is, he keeps getting these favorable matchups. And Johnny Walker is another one. So give me Khalil Roundtree, 8,800 for the win. I'll have a little of both sides, though. This is a great GPP fight. Another one. This is more of a Stars and Scrubs than a mid-tier fight, I guess, technically. Joe, you start this one.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, although I agree that it's a fight to target. I have faded Roundtree in pretty much every fight. You know, even when he fought, you know, the Werewolf of Texas, Jolly. I was on Jolly in that fight, and he knocked him out in like 4 seconds. So
I was on him against Saki, which is great.
Yeah, so, well, yeah, that was good. So I get it. You know, he hits really hard. He's got no other, you know, facets to his game. I mean, you know, Walker is young. He's fairly athletic. He's 6'5". He's coming off of a 6-fight winning streak. I give him a shot here. I mean, you know, he looked pretty good on, you know, Dana White's Contender Series, Brazil. I think this is a great fight to target. I think you should certainly have some Sarza Walker. I don't think Roundtree's a lock by any means. The win against De Silva is not awe-inspiring. But again, I think an athletic guy, 6'5". Let's see, what camp does he train at? I don't see his camp. I guess because I faded Roundtree in every single fight in his career in the UFC, I might as well just fade him again here and pick Johnny Walker. So I love the guy's name. I love a Brazilian fighter with the name Johnny Walker. And you should as well, Sean, because that's a drink that you imbibe in. I would say I will take Johnny Walker here. But forget about my pick. It is a fight to target for GPPs. So target this fight for GPPs.
Chris?
Sean, why so blue? Anyway.
that was terrible.
Anyway. terrible. I wrote that down before I got here. I paid off.
Bang for your bucks. Just buy Green Label.
Yeah.
Okay. But I don't know how you could. I mean, this is just going to be a fun mishmash of nonsense until it ends. Right. I don't really know how you could be confident in either guy.
Agreed.
Khalil Roundtree is just, you know, he basically just throws from his hip until he gets tired, which generally happens 3 minutes into round one. And I'm not exaggerating by saying that. His fight against Olajuwon, literally, he came out firing, and he was tired in the first 3 minutes. Now, we see a couple different sides of Roundtree. He's either the wild striker who comes forward and gets tired, or the wild striker who counterpunches. And we really never know which one we're going to get. He has a good kicking game. I don't know. Johnny Walker is kind of a monster. I mean, you mentioned his size, but with that comes an 82-inch reach. I mean, he's a monster. He doesn't always use his length. He's one of these guys who likes to throw jumping knees, like Luis Pena, who we mentioned last week, which drives me crazy. But when he does stick to the game and throw good straight punches, he's really effective. And he throws high kicks. And, I mean, he's more of a willing grappler than he is a good one, I would say. But Khalil Roundtree isn't a grappler at all. So, you know, Roundtree's going to have to close the distance here. Roundtree's going to have to deal with some groundwork. I'm going to go with Johnny Walker to keep on walking in a weird and wild fight.
All right, co-main event, Ricardo Lamas, 8,700, taking on Darren Elkins at 7,500. Lamas is the favorite. I think the line is falling, -160. Elkins at +150. Look, we know the story with Darren Elkins, has some grappling, is impossible to finish, it seems like. Lamas, back end of his career, still a dangerous striker, has a little bit of grappling. Really, really interesting fight that's projected to end in a finish, minus 180. No, sorry, projected to go to the judges' scorecards, sorry. Minus 180 to go to the judges. I think Lamas... This one is so tough for me. For skill, for skill, most people are better than Darren Elkins, and Lamas is in that camp. It's how much does he slow down? Is Elkins going to be able to outgrit him for a round and a half and steal a close decision? Ultimately, I'm going to pick Ricardo Lamas to win. I can't rely on a guy whose best attribute is his toughness. I've always said that. I think Lamas is just enough to keep this fight standing. The issue is I do think Darren Elkins is going to be one of the more popular plays in the card, which actually makes me like Lamas a little more. So give me Ricardo Lamas at 8,700 as my preferred play. I don't think Elkins is able to out-tough him. Lamas could get a finish, probably just by volume on the ground. But Lamas is the play here. Chris, start us off with a co-main event.
Yeah, I can't pick Darren Elkins in any fight. That's pretty much – he just gets hit way too much. If you're a lot faster than him, you're just going to kill him. And even if you're not like a really fast guy, like Volkanovski isn't lightning quick, but he was quicker than Elkins. Elkins is just so slow. He doesn't retract his strikes all the way up. He keeps his hands low when he brings them back, which just lets him get tagged up immediately. He has some pretty nice – I mean, I sort of like how he ends his combinations with body kicks and stuff, and obviously – his grappling is good. It's what saved him against Michael Johnson. But to me, he's just sort of a punching bag. And his fights, especially recently, have been, okay, well, can I take enough damage before I somehow find a way to win the fight? And I agree with Sean. You just can't pick fights based on that. So I like this as a nice bounce back for Lamas. I don't think that he's got anything like, you know, the power or the in and out skill of an Emmett. I don't think he's got the overall talent of a guy like Bektic. I mean, he did beat Bektic, but we all know what happened in that fight. And he was getting massacred until he pulled out a Hail Mary, in case you don't know. So yeah, I'm going to take Lamas pretty heavily here. And even if he doesn't finish, I really think he can probably pile up strikes and still put up a decent score.
Joe.
Okay, so quickly, you know, Lamas is, you know, has been hearing the whispers, you know, like he's getting older. He's 36 years old. He lost on a split to Bektic. He lost, he got KO'd by Josh Emmett. He has fought the level of competition over the course of his career has been so much better. You know, he's pretty much better everywhere versus Elkins. I want to believe that he's going to throw caution to the wind here and just try to be impressive, because I don't know that losing three fights in a row are going to bode well for Lamas. You know, by the way, he was a plus 200 underdog on that split decision loss to Bektic. So I certainly see him performing well here. I don't think he's going to be – I do believe that Elkins will actually be higher owned. He's a fan favorite. He takes a lot of damage. I think – you know, Lamas could be a sneaky little play here to get the finish. You know, I guess technically he might be mid-range at 8.7K, and if that's the case, then I lied. I do like a fighter in the mid-range. My pick here is Lamas, and I don't know if it's a hot take, but I see him getting the finish.
I definitely think it's in play. All right, main event time. Santiago Ponzinibbio at 9,000, taking on Neil Magny at 7,200. Ponzinibbio the favorite, minus 215. Magny the dog at plus 195. Every time Neil Magny fights, I say the same thing, and I get crucified every time. Sometimes I know how Chris feels. Neil Magny is criminally underrated, in my opinion. I'm not saying he's a future champion. He is just people love to shit on Neil Magny. And that's not coming off of, you know, the win over Craig White. I get it's Craig White. Took down Carlos Condit. Beat Johnny Hendricks. You know, he lost to Lorenz Larkin. What's interesting, he struggles against guys who are going to blitz him.
He beat Gastelum.
Right. So he's
a long time ago now. Long time ago.
Still, people love to shit on him for reasons I don't quite get. He's long. He doesn't use his length well. I get it. He will struggle when people blitz him. Look at what Lorenz Larkin did. And that's Ponzinibbio's path here. Ponzinibbio has a vicious lead left eye poke, which I guarantee you, I guarantee you we're going to see in this fight.
Yeah, one on the Gunnar Nelson fight.
So this fight, though, is closer than people think. I'm on the stack for cash. I think it's Santiago early or Magny late. We saw Neil. We all agreed that we're all over the Mike Perry experiment, right? We're all kind of, and even I'm fooled. Like, Mike Perry isn't that good, right? He had a war with Santiago Ponzinibbio. Neil Magny takes down Perry, and it's a wrap from there. So styles make fights. I think if Magny can use Ponzinibbio's momentum coming forward to land one of the body lock takedowns he loves so much, he doesn't. That's how he gets his takedowns. And he ends up on top. Things could get real interesting here. So I know he was submitted by RDA, but he's got a decent top game. Ponzinibbio doesn't have a ground game. Like I said, Ponzinibbio early, Magny late. Magny more likely to win a decision, in my opinion. Santiago needs to blitz, and he's going to, and we'll see what happens. Both in play for DraftKings. I like the stack and cash. Joe, take us home.
Okay, so look, I pretty much agree with everything you said. The narrative that I would add to this is that, you know, Ponzinibbio is the Argentinian fighter headlining an Argentinian card, the first card the UFC has ever had in Argentina. Is there added pressure on him relative to that? I mean, you know, more demands from media. Is it a distraction? You know, we've found out from other fighters that that is truly the case. They actually prefer fighting, you know, away from their home base. You know, Magny's got cardio for days. However, the game plan to beat him is quite simple. Just watch the Lorenz Larkin fight. That was the most brutal display of kicking, I mean, to the body that I have ever seen. I mean, watch him wince on those body kicks. If Ponzinibbio comes out and does that and can avoid the takedown, then I you know, I'm going to pick Ponzinibbio to win here, but it's not without some caution that if this fight gets into the later rounds, even given that it's Argentina, Magny does have a shot here to pull out a decision if Ponzinibbio slows down, you know, perceivably. So let's go with, and it's not a hot take because Sean already said it, let's go with Ponzinibbio early with a chance if Magny hangs around for him to grind something out.
Chris?
Yeah, I like that, Sean, by the way, you said. I don't get why people shit on him, and then proceeded to list the reasons why people shit on him, which I agree with, by the way. I think that, look,
I listed the one reason.
I'll give you one more. Okay. I'll give you one more, which Joe alluded to. Leg kicks turn him into a quivering mess of nothingness. You saw, Joe mentioned the Lorenz Larkin fight. How about the RDA fight? It was literally one leg kick that sent him spinning into a takedown, and then the fight was over. His leg is stuck way out there. Santiago Ponzinibbio, you talk about that Mike Perry fight, had some of the hardest leg kicks I've ever seen him throw in that fight. So that's going to be a real issue. Neil Magny, he just can't deal with pressure. He just can't deal with it. And Ponzinibbio is going to give him all of it that he can handle. Neil Magny, I guess he can beat you if he can out-wrestle you, but, I mean, is that really what we want to hang our hat on? Here is the wrestling game of Neil Magny. I just don't think that's a really smart investment. I think Ponzinibbio, you know, maybe spends half a round to get his range and then knocks him out. That's about it.
All right, let's go for hot takes, and let's make these quick because I am being called for dinner, guys, and I'm starving.
And I'm starving as well.
So hot takes, alluded to it earlier. The optimal lineup will have at least four fighters from the middle.
Oof.
Five fights. So between 86 and 7,600, I think the optimal lineup is going to have at least four of those fighters. So I'm building a lot of mid-range lineups this week. You got one, Joe?
Johnny Walker by KO over Roundtree.
Boo!
We'll take that. I guess it play. I don't think that's that hot, quite honestly. I think one of those guys is going to sleep no matter what. But okay. I will take an underdog knockout. It's not the one, that we were teasing in the open. That's called a switcheroo. I'm gonna take Austin Arnett to get the stoppage against Bendenheim.
I can see that.
Both of your guys' hot takes would be bad for me. Joe's less because we'll have both sides.
Yeah.
But that's Fight IQ for UFC Buenos Aires. We'll be back next week for the card in China. There will be a Fight IQ. I may or may not be on, but there will be content for you. Enjoy your holiday. If you don't have time to invest, this is what I want to close out real quick. I know I said to be quick. If you don't have time to research a fight, like Joe said earlier, bet with your head, not over it. If you're not able to do the appropriate amount of research in DFS, play very, very little for fun or just skip a week. It's okay to miss a week.
Oh, by the way, Sean, we've got a shout out to the guy who on Twitter, and oh my God, I wish I had his handle in front of me. He said, thanks to, you know, content that we provided as well as our friend Mike at Guru Elite Med Labs. You know, he's up 5,000 for the month, and he is buying 500 meals for the poor for Thanksgiving. So
that was Mr. Joe Rogan disciple.
Shout out. That is something like that makes it worth putting the time in when you hear that, you know, one, he's won money and he's giving back. That's just solid karma. So props to Joe Rogan disciple for doing that. Everybody should learn a lesson from that. And
he's a funny guy on Twitter too. You should go follow him. And to wrap up, just because doing good, guys, go buy. I'm gonna curse, and sorry, Jake and whoever else listening to RotoWire. Go buy a goddamn Ray Borg shirt. Go buy a Borg Strong shirt, and let's be done with it.
Sounds good.
Like, don't just be done with it, but go invest. Don't get on the fence. Some of those videos, if you have a kid, they're tough to watch. Go and support Ray Borg MMA. You should be doing it anyway, but this is a specific cause that, for me, I think everybody really should support. And shout out to Brendan Schaub, who some people probably hate, taking care of Borg's medical bills is the rumor, and he's not going around, you know, asking for a ton of
public. That's awesome
pub about it. So all that being said, enjoy UFC Buenos Aires, enjoy your Thanksgiving holiday. We will, or someone will, see you next week. Good luck in your contest, guys. It was fun. Take care.
Out.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.